Welcome to the Bullpen Report on the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It's Red Fox Roto, your host, Dan Thompson. Today is Tuesday. It's April 14th. And what a week has just passed. There's plenty to talk about today. I'll try to keep it under the usual 15 minutes by just giving time to the most important news that we need to know and the bullpen situations that we need to monitor. And I suppose I have to begin in Texas. On Sunday night, Jacob Junis was the biggest free agent addition in the NFBC's 12-team online championship contest and the 15-team main event contest. His average winning bids were over $100. He had a max bid of $301 in the OC. That's 30% of that team's total annual FAD budget on Jacob Junis. I never thought I'd be saying that. Now, on Saturday's FAB preview episode, I covered how Jacob Junis' saves on Monday and Tuesday of last week could be explained as him being in the right place at the right time. There was kind of a perfect storm. Robert Garcia and Chris Martin were both pitching poorly. They were removed from the late innings. Other pitchers were either unavailable or coming off of heavy usage. More trusted options than Junis were being used in higher leverage moments earlier in the games. And Cole Wynn saved the game on Wednesday. So at that point, there was still a legitimate question, you know, as to who was the favorite to fill the ninth inning void, if it were to be one pitcher primarily. But then Sunday happened. So let's walk through Sunday's game. Jacob deGrom had pitched really well through six innings. The left-handed Jacob Latz started the seventh with a one-run lead. And that made sense because three of the first four batters due up for the Dodgers were left-handed. Latz got a couple of outs, but he put the tying run on second base. So in came Cole Wynn in what was certainly a high-leverage moment. The Dodgers' number three hitter, their hottest hitter, Andy Pages, was at the plate, the tying run in scoring position. Well, Cole Wynn retires Pages, then the Rangers score two more runs and increase their lead to three. So Wynn stayed in the game, pitched the eighth inning. And this is notable because it was against the heart of the Dodgers' order, the four through six hitters, Freddie Freeman, Max Muncy, and Alex Freeland, but all left-handed, which shows that there's some trust in the right-handed Cole Wynn to get through that situation, which he did unscathed. He allowed a base runner, but he ended the inning against Dalton Rushing, the fourth lefty he faced in a row. So when it gets to the ninth inning, Jacob Junis now has a three-run lead, and he gets to open with the number eight and nine hitters in the lineup. The assignment was made much tougher when Will Smith pinch hit in the nine spot, and Junis walked him, but he was able to get Shohei Ohtani and Kyle Tucker to secure his third save of the season and the week. So we obviously can't ignore a three-save week, and we can't just dismiss it saying, well, it's Jacob Junis. He just got lucky. I don't want it to sound like I'm doing that. Junis has been fantastic these first few weeks, and he's definitely earned that late-inning role that he has. But we just saw a mostly sharper than average NFBC crowd pay an average FAB price for Junis as if he's locked into that Rangers closer role. And I don't think the evidence quite shows that we're there yet. All three of Junis' saves last week, to varying degrees, could show that he wasn't saved for the ninth because he's the closer. Rather, he was the guy who was available for the ninth when other pitchers either weren't available themselves or they were needed for bigger outs earlier in the game. Now, for fantasy purposes, that can be a valuable role and one that can evolve into more security as the go-to ninth inning guy. But before I can say Jacob Junis is the Rangers' closer, I want to see him chosen over Cole Wynn, over Jacob Latz, over everyone else when those guys are all available at the same time. You know, let's see what happens when the Rangers take the lead in the bottom of the eighth at home. Who comes out for the ninth then? if it's Junis getting the call over everyone else, sure, those triple digit bids now make more sense and maybe you get some value out of that. I'm sure there's going to be plenty more to say and write about the Rangers this week and in the coming weeks. I'm definitely eager to see how things play out in this bullpen because I do believe it's possible that a primary closer emerges from what we've seen so far. But let's stay in Texas and head east to Houston. On Saturday's Bullpen Report podcast, I made the case that Brian Abreu should have been dropped in fantasy leagues on Sunday, unless he converted a clean save chance over the weekend. Now, should we still call it a win if he threw a scoreless inning in mop-up duty? He allowed a hit, yet another walk, needed 27 pitches to get those three outs. So I say no. We're still not witnessing the Abreu of the past 3 years, and I would have dropped him. But 73% of the NFBC OC League owners disagreed with me. They decided to take Wilson Phillips' advice and hold on for one more day, or in this case, week. But Brian King was a popular addition in free agency. He's up to 55% ownership in the OC. There's a solid chance that King could get a save opportunity this week, so I like that move. I made it myself in a few places. But with all the injuries the Astros have endured in just this past week alone, they are eagerly anticipating the return of Josh Hader. Hader seems like he's almost ready to face live hitters, so his return timeline probably still a few weeks out at least. And right now it's really up in the air who saves the most games in Houston before Hader is back. Let's update Kansas City next, where Carlos Estevez was just obliterated by the Braves on March 31st, soon after he was placed on the IL with what was called a foot contusion. Many scoffed that it was a phantom injury, so that Estevez had time to keep ramping up his velocity, without serving up batting practice in major league games. Well, it turns out that Estevez didn't actually throw a full bullpen session until this past Thursday, which was nearly 2 weeks after the injury. So it may have been legitimate. But either way, Estevez doesn't seem likely to return quickly. And at this point, he may not even resume his role as the Royals closer when he does come back. Because in his stead, Lucas Erceg is already up to 5 saves. He has a nice 2.7 ERA, 105 whip, good-looking surface numbers. But Erceg's only struck out 16.7% of the batters he's faced this year. I mean, that's like dead ball era strikeout rate. It leaves him with a small margin for error. His 50% ground ball rate has been a big assist so far. But Erceg really hasn't been dominant enough for us to feel secure that he's fully usurped that closer role from Estevez. But obviously the runway is lengthening and he still has that chance to really lock it in. All right, now heading out west, we have goings on for both teams in LA. Well, one team in LA anyway. So we'll start with that team, the Dodgers. When they signed Edwin Diaz in the offseason, it seemed like any chance of a closer controversy was finally gone. Yet here we are, just a few weeks into 2026, and already there's some doubts over Diaz's performance and possibly his health. His fastball velocity is only averaging about 95.8 this year. He was up over 97 last year. Diaz himself is insisting that he feels fine physically, which of course he would say. He says he's ready to pitch. Manager Dave Roberts has said the Dodgers don't believe there's any mechanical issues, but he recently described Diaz as day-to-day, and at one point over the weekend, the team was staying away from using him. Now, it seemed like the plan was for Diaz to take the mound at some point in the first series of this week. But the Dodgers had a 4-run lead entering the ninth last night, and we did not see Edwin Diaz on the mound. Instead, Tanner Scott finished things off. So in the worst-case scenario where Edwin Diaz does miss some time, my guess is that Dave Roberts would resort to last season's mix and match style of managing the late innings. You know, you'd see Tanner Scott, Blake Treinen, Alex Vesia all involved. For now, though, it's just wait and see on Edwin Diaz, his velocity and his results whenever he does get into a game next. Now, across the way in Anaheim, Jordan Romano turned into a pumpkin last night, finally. Failing to record an out against the Yankees, he allowed 3 runs on 3 hits and 2 walks, blew his first save, took the loss. This isn't the same Jordan Romano from his best years in Toronto. But this also isn't the same Jordan Romano from the last 2 seasons when he was dealing with injuries and, you know, some physical limitations. The Jordan Romano we have now is somewhere in between and is capable of both extremes. He was mostly an early waiver wire addition, so we should be happy to bank as many saves as we can. Romano was never a play for elite ratio production. I don't think anyone expected that. At this point, though, the return of Kirby Yates, possibly soon, it could add some pressure on Romano. So it's just kind of wait and see, as most bullpens are. It's day to day. Now, on the Yankees' side, their own closer, David Bednar, his velocity is down so far this season on all 3 of his pitches. And as a result, he has a 5.4 ERA, a whip that's over 2. Now, Bednar has still helped fantasy teams with 5 saves through the first few weeks of the season. But those who invested an early pick would certainly love to see some zeros strung together soon. It hasn't all been bad, though. Bednar has allowed a BABIP of 478. That's due for some helpful regression. He's yet to allow a barrel. He's generating ground balls at a career best 57.1% rate. So for right now, you know, David Bednar's performance is just something to monitor, keep an eye on. Camilo Doval would be the next man up, but he's had some struggles of his own, allowed a few runs last night. So Bednar should have plenty of time to get right. Now over to San Francisco, where in March, presumed closer Ryan Walker appeared in the 8th inning, and then the 9th, and the 9th again. But April has been a very different story. Ryan Walker has entered games in the 6th inning, the 7th inning, and then the 6th inning again. So those first 2 times, he immediately followed Robbie Ray. And we heard Joe Vitello's somewhat flimsy excuse that he was just taking advantage of their widely different release points. Okay, whatever. I can at least see there's some sort of sense to that. Sunday was different, though. No Robbie Ray, and Walker still pitched in the 6th inning with the Giants losing, and he allowed 3 hits and an earned run. So maybe it was because he hadn't thrown in 5 days and Ryan Walker just needed some work. There's no reason yet to be in full-blown panic since the Giants haven't created a 9th-inning save chance since March. We don't know that Walker isn't the closer or that anyone else will replace him. But this creates yet another bullpen that we need to watch closely. What happens in the Giants' next save chance can swing the fantasy values of several pitchers there. Well, that will bring this Tuesday episode of the Bullpen Report to a finish. This has been the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'll be back Saturday for the free agency preview. But for now, let's close it out.